Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University and the co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy, and co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. He had a recent article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance, Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. And Tuesday in the White House, the top tech executives in the country met with President Obama, urging him to move aggressively to overhaul the way the NSA conducts surveillance, or the government in general. And these were some, you know, the heads of CEOs of Apple, Yahoo, Facebook, and some of the big companies like Cisco, etc. This has followed, of course, a full-page ad a week or so ago in the Washington Post and the New York Times by these very same tech giants complaining about NSA abuses and how it's affecting their business bottom line. So let's begin with that. Your article back a while ago in The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick really was ahead of the curve in warning that there was this blowback in terms of these NSA revelations from Edward Snowden being very detrimental to American business. So is that what's finally driven these CEOs to show up at the White House?
Yeah, it's money that's driven them to the White House. They're worried that their businesses are going to be hurt by, among other things, countries where they do a lot of business now, like Germany, for example, or France or Brazil, mandating that data that flows over the internet be stored locally. So that would hurt American tech giants because a lot of their business involves data from all around the world flowing to facilities located in the United States. In order to comply with those what are called data sovereignty mandates, the tech giants like Facebook or Twitter or Yahoo or Google would have to expand their data centers around the world, would have to do things from a network architecture perspective that aren't very efficient in order to comply with those laws. Or maybe even if they comply with those laws create an opening for competitors, especially abroad, who haven't had much of an opening before. So this is a little bit unpredictable. And these tech companies, who are all right now sitting on gigantic pots of gold, are a little bit worried about their future. And the NSA's mass surveillance programs are what brought that about.
Well, I understand that Cisco made the case that it's already losing money and customers from abroad because they simply don't trust that their data is not being, you know, stolen through a back door. What's your understanding right about where that stands?
Cisco has a lot to worry about. Cisco has a lot to worry about, not least because it's been revealed that the NSA actually sneaks its way into standard-setting bodies that set encryption algorithms for different technologies, including routers, and it designs backdoors into these encryption schemes, meaning that the NSA can break these encryption schemes when it needs to and gain access to encrypted data. If you're a business and you want to be able to securely route, say, your proprietary data, your trade secrets over the internet without worry of it being spied on, you might be a little bit worried about Cisco routers that you fear. Now, I don't know if there's definitive proof, but you might fear the security of which is compromised.
So my understanding is that what really is disturbing a lot of foreign customers and a lot of American customers is the growing use of these cloud-based data storage units, I guess, or data storage behemoths, you know. And I believe, for example, Amazon has in many ways the lead in building them, but they're becoming more and more useful for big corporations to store all their data. They put secure data in, but apparently the NSA has found a way in through the back door. And is this having a detrimental impact on this huge growing phenomenon of cloud data storage?
So I think the tech companies are worried about this. I think the tech companies worried about it because, you know, no one knows exactly what the NSA's capability is at this point, but we do know that they have been focused on being able to access encrypted data, right, as it travels over networks and, you know, is processed by companies like Google, for example, right? So there's recently been a report that the NSA taps into fiber optic cables that connect data centers, Google's data centers, and intercepts a lot of traffic that way. Right now, you know, people who are thinking about storing their communications with Google have to think, well, are my communications going to be intercepted as they travel between the data centers? And this is a big worry for companies like Google. It's not just Google. It's Yahoo. It's Facebook. It's Twitter. This is a big worry because if people are counting on, you know, the privacy of their communications, they worry that they can't count on them if the NSA has access through taps of various sorts.
So what's your sense then of whether or not this group of executives, I mean, aren't they some of the most successful companies in America? Do we have a case of conflicting or competing lobbies here? We know we have the military-industrial complex, which is huge, and we also know from the Snowden leaks how much of the intelligence budget's now going to these big contractors that Snowden worked for, one of them after all.
Yes, that's true.
So you have that lobby on the one side. Is there a Silicon Valley lobby as well as a countervailing lobby against the power of the military-industrial complex and of the, I guess, what you'd call the intelligence-industrial complex?
So there is a Silicon Valley lobby. It's relatively young, and it remains to be seen how powerful it is. So you might recall almost 2 years ago now, there was a battle over some proposed bills that were known as SOPA and TIPA, which were bills that would have expanded basically the government's ability to shut down websites that were accused of having something to do with copyright infringement. These bills were drafted as very blunt instruments. They were drafted basically to please Hollywood lobby. And, you know, pretty late in the game, Silicon Valley got involved, and they mounted an incredibly effective lobbying campaign against SOPA and TIPA, and those bills went down in flames. So when Silicon Valley is really roused, they can be very effective. And I think, you know, I'm at least cautiously optimistic that they're roused now. Now, the key for them, if they want to be successful, is to turn Dianne Feinstein. So, you know, a lot of the Silicon Valley businesses, of course, are located in California. Dianne Feinstein is California's senior senator. She has been, as the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, probably the single most vocal defender of what I consider to be illegal NSA mass spying. So, you know, if the tech community can get to her and say, hey, look, you know, you're our senator and this is very bad for your constituents, if she is in a mind to listen to them, that could make a big difference. Because in the Senate, she is the linchpin for the NSA, you know, being able to continue to do what it's doing, which is, you know, launch surveillance programs that reach millions, hundreds of millions of people in America and around the world without any sort of a warrant, without any sort of particularized suspicion of wrongdoing. So she's the key, and we'll see if they can get to her. If she, you know, she's very senior and she's probably very difficult to dislodge. So it might be that she just feels that she can ignore them, but, you know, time will tell.
Again, I'm speaking with Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University, co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy, and co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. He had a recent article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance, Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. So you had 15 of these high-tech bigwigs in attendance at this White House meeting on Tuesday. I mentioned the Apple CEO and the Yahoo, Facebook, Google, but you also had Twitter, Comcast, Netflix, AT&T, Microsoft, Cisco, etc. If you add up the value of these 15 big companies, wouldn't you be up there in the stratosphere?
Yeah, you're certainly about, well, north of $1 trillion, maybe as much as $1.4 trillion. It's a lot of money, obviously, but I would be careful about this because the telecom companies, so Verizon, AT&T, they have been much more friendly to NSA mass surveillance than the tech companies. So this is at best, you know, a troublesome thing for the tech companies and potentially business threatening for the tech companies. It's not the same for the telcos. So the telcos are typically regional monopolies, or they're involved in wireless communications as a, you know, small number of national wireless carriers. They don't face very fierce competition. They are more concerned with basically giving the government what it wants because, you know, they are, of course, regulated regional monopolists if they're landline providers, or highly regulated, small number, I would potentially call them oligopolists in the wireless space. They depend on government for a lot of goodies. And so, you know, the telcos have not been at all any kind of bulwark for consumers against the NSA's illegal mass spying programs. I don't know how effective they're going to be as, you know, advocates for some sort of more civil liberties regarding policies.
Well, a lot of those telco companies, and particularly the big Time Warner, NBC, Universal, Comcast, they spend a lot of lobbying on basically maintaining these monopolies, particularly in the pipe that goes into your home. And we also had
we also had that recently
that disgraceful display of corporate brinksmanship with CBS and Time Warner that cost Time Warner, I think, about 400,000 customers, me included. So my sense here is that those big companies use Washington lobbying to basically to protect their monopolistic position. And isn't it true that Google is out there laying lots of fiber optics and they may end up doing an end run around them all? Because hasn't in the broadest sense, the U.S., who invented the Internet, haven't they lagged behind the rest of the world in broadband diffusion, for example?
Yeah, so, I mean, it depends on which study you look at, but we're certainly not in a leading position with respect to broadband access. And in terms of, you know, Google's potential threat to the telecom companies, it's real, in part because Google has some experimental projects where they provide fiber to communities and then provide broadband internet access. There's also the worry that Google just has pots of money, and, you know, if they decide to get into the business of providing internet access, they could do that. You know, so the telecom companies understand Google as a threat. They're not an immediate threat, but they're a longer-term threat. You know, I don't know if we're planning to talk about the court decision, but, you know, I think that was a pretty important decision. You know, I don't know if you know about the New York Times article that Jennifer and I had back in June, but we kind of predicted that these illegal spying programs run afoul of the Fourth Amendment, and now they have, and I think that's a real turning point.
Well, by all means, we just started out today's program talking about Judge Leon's decision, which I suggested was a bit of a surprise, and so by all means, comment on it, if you will, Christopher.
Yeah, so the most important part of Judge Leon's decision is he dismissed the relevance of a Supreme Court holding called Smith versus Maryland, which is a pretty old case, and it involves the installation by the police of a pen register. That is a device that tracks where a phone is calling and when, so a particular phone. And the reason that the cops put this pen register on this phone line was there was a person who was suspected of having broken in to somebody's home, having burglarized somebody's home, and the pen register was put in to see what calls he made, and it turns out he called the burglary victim. So there was some evidence that he'd been involved, right? So what the opinion involves, obviously, is a single phone being tapped where there's probable cause to believe that this person has something to do with the burglary. And the government has identified this opinion as being essentially a license for the government to tap essentially everybody's phone to intercept everybody's data. And the reason the government says this is because in a piece of dicta in the opinion, the Supreme Court says that telephone metadata is not something in which any individual has an expectation of privacy, because you essentially give this data to the phone company when you make calls, and you have no expectation of privacy in it. So I think that decision is a bad decision. It's wrongly decided. But Judge Leon doesn't really say that it's wrongly decided. That's not his role as a lower court judge. What Judge Leon says is it doesn't apply. He confines the decision to its facts. He says, okay, so this decision involved a single tap on a single phone. This is completely different set of circumstances from what we have here. Oh, and to boot, you know, our relationship with our cell phones now is completely different than our relationship with our landlines at the time of Smith versus Maryland, right? We do all of these things with our phones. We do so much communication over them now, right, both with data and with voice. We do have an expectation of privacy in those communications that really is nothing like just a simple telephone metadata produced by a landline back at the time of Smith versus Maryland. So Judge Leon sets aside the relevance of this decision, which I think is right. I think the decision is completely outmoded and should be confined to its facts. So I think, you know, that's a great move, and we'll see now whether that's upheld on appeal.
Well, from what you're telling us, Christopher Sprigman, it would seem that if you base the metadata collection that the NSA is doing, and by the way, Judge Leon's ruling does not stop the ongoing collection. But
no, it does not.
But if you take what you've just told us, what it seems to me is that what the government is arguing here is that this criminal case gives them an opening to do blanket surveillance on every American citizen almost, which in effect makes all of us criminals, or at least presupposes that we're all criminals, which is a preposterous notion, isn't it?
Yeah, just think of the difference between Smith versus Maryland and what the NSA is actually doing. So in Smith versus Maryland, you have a particular suspect in a particular crime, right? There's probable cause to support a warrant. There's a pen register applied, right? So there are all these factors which are present that are not present in NSA mass surveillance. So there you don't have any particularized, now when we're talking about NSA mass surveillance, we don't have any particularized suspicion of any person in at all. We have just a general kind of dragnet. We have, you know, wide scale surveillance, not surveillance focused on one particular phone line or one particular facility or one particular person. And to boot, this surveillance isn't just for a few days until we assemble a call record for a particular suspect that either links him or doesn't link him to a crime. This surveillance is potentially forever. And the communications that are captured as a result of this surveillance are stored and are searchable and usable by the government potentially forever. It's a completely different set of circumstances. And Judge Leon realized that. I think the simple answer is, Smith versus Maryland was never the license to do what the NSA is doing that the government thought it was, and a judge has now said that. The inevitability of NSA spying, you know, has just gone out the window, and we'll see what happens now. But right now, I think the NSA programs have taken a very big hit.
Well, Christopher Sprigman, I thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University, co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law and Policy, and co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. He has a recent article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance, Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with Michelle Richardson of the ACLU's Washington office about growing momentum against the NSA.